Bear.
Ah, you dickheads.
Welcome to episode 20 of Double Dodge. This one's called The New Hotness. And Campbell, we made it.
We made it. 19 more than I thought we'd get to.
20. It's a special number. It's a special number.
It is. It is. You know how special number 20 is?
I don't. Tell me all about it.
Numerically, 20 precedes number 21.
Oh my God. 21.
But you didn't know that?
I'm just coming to learn a whole range of things.
And it's statistically improbable to roll 20 on one die, one six-sided dice too.
Not with your die.
Yeah, mine have like 20 on one side. In fact, on all six, so.
Yeah.
No, it's pretty awesome. It's been a good journey and we're keeping on.
Have we been at this for nearly a year now?
I know. It's a little bit scary as well, isn't it?
Yeah. What have we built?
What a waste of fucking time.
What a monster.
Hey, speaking of wasting time, we have a couple of people that have wasted their time and money to sponsor us on our Patreon account.
Well.
Yes. And as part of their pledge, we've pledged to talk about how much of a waste of money it is. So I'd like to shout out to Brendan Newhouse and Gabriel Caban, or Caban. That's Gabe from the kickoff, from all the fans out there of podcasting. So if you've got anything to say to Gabe, maybe we'll run that out as our next competition.
You know what I've got to say to Gabe?
What?
Thank you.
Oh, fucking legend. No, and they are genuine legends. They've wasted their money, but they're genuine legends. So we've cracked the 30 mark, and we're going strong.
Whoa, man, that's sweet Patreon cash. Woo! Thank
that's
you.
That's going to buy year each at Nationals, I reckon.
Yeah, that's amazing. Thank you to both those guys.
Yeah.
So, this episode, we're talking to Stockport Fast Talk champion 2017 himself, the one and only Jamie Perkins, about the upcoming, or by the time this drops, the new errata.
Yep.
There's a pretty big shake-up, actually. There's a good deal of change in the air. And I think there's going to be people who are happy and people who are maybe a little bit sad.
I'm both of those people, actually. Hmm. I'm in both camps there. I've always been a bit of a fence sitter. But yeah, I think with my alchemist hat on and my light-footed boots that I don't have anymore, I would say it's a fair change. Makes me a little bit grumpy. But then when I pull my bow out, I'm pretty fucking pumped, to be honest.
Yes.
So it's all hunters from here on in, I think.
Well, I'm just happy to see the fuckboy finally get fucked.
Yeah, that is also valid. No, there's some fantastic changes, and this chat's really good because it helps us basically pick the brain of Jamie P, so, you know, senior developer at Steamforged, and really understand why these changes were made for thematic or game balance reasons.
Yes, but enough of us babbling on in this intro. We can babble on in the guts of the podcast.
Absolutely. Let's do it. New hotness.
We have got the Stockport Fast Talk champion, Jamie Perkins, on the line once again. Perkins, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I can make a concerted effort to slow down a little bit if you'd like, or not.
We like it fast.
Nope.
Yeah, cool. Go have a coffee. Cool. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Yeah. Perkins, we're talking to you about something that is near and dear to your heart and may just shake up the meta a little bit. You guys are about to drop an errata.
We are. I mean, by the time the podcast is out, that errata will probably be out in the public. People can have a look at it and read it for themselves if they like, or they can have a listen to us talking through the changes individually. So that's,
Options.
Errata day.
Options.
Yep.
That's great. So we've had a quick look at the errata document, and it's actually pretty comprehensive. There's been a big shake-up, and a lot of it looks really, really interesting. So we're thinking maybe we just go through the various changes with you and maybe get deep inside your brain, get some of the thought processes, and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, should we just dig into it then?
Let's just
start
get into
at the
it.
Top. Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, it's not necessarily in alphabetical order, but whatever, let's just dig into it. The one I've got at the top of my list here is, so we got Shark, the fisherman, he's up first. So we got The thing with Shark is that we were finding a little bit that the double stack of his movement modifiers of Gut and String and his legendary play were causing a little bit of an unfun experience occasionally. So if Shark comes
occasionally. Okay, sorry.
I get to be liberal with my phrasing every now and then.
Yeah, okay, don't worry.
Anyway, so basically when Shark comes careening in, scores this really fantastic goal, but then on top of that, he Gut and Strings your favourite models, and then he legendary plays on your team, and you're getting some of your team with, most of your team probably with a -4 move modifier, and then some of your team with a -8 move modifier, and it's just not the most fun experience for a couple of turns until you can sort of play the game properly afterwards. So we weren't happy with that overall stat. What we did want to do with Shark is we wanted to make sure we left his offensive potential completely untouched. So Shark is still going to be able to score goals like as much as he likes, and he's not going to slow down that aspect at all. But overall, what we did is we replaced Gut and String completely with a brand new character play that's called Stagger, and all Stagger does is it triggers in exactly the same way as Gut and String, where it triggered from the playbook, and it's just got range P, so it's only in melee, and it just applies a -1 defense debuff to the opposing model. It doesn't apply a movement debuff. On top of that, we also reduced the actual pull size of his legendary play, Caught in a Net, and we reduced that pull size from 8 inches to 6 inches, just because generally we found out that most legendary plays seem to be happiest around the sort of the 6-inch size, whether that's as an aura or a pulse, and that's certainly no different for Shark. But yeah, so overall, basically, he's only going to be able to give you a -4 move penalty now, so he can still score goals as easily as he wanted to before, but you just have to be a little bit more careful in terms of your placement of Shark afterwards so that he doesn't suffer too many repercussions from the enemy team once they're really angry that he scored a really cool goal against them.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things, wasn't it, that you could actually make a mistake in positioning him because the legendary is so big, you still can snag most of the team anyway, whereas this just, you know, a good player still plays it basically the same, just forces you to be a bit more precise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe it means you look at some of his other plays if you're looking at defensive tech, like the legendary plus a title surge to push an enemy player away that's a major threat. You know, I think it's less just point-and-click YOLO now. It means you have to play Shark with a little bit more forethought, and that can only be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, the thing I need to stress is that we haven't reduced his ability to actually offensively score goals at all whatsoever. It's just literally about how easy it is to protect Shark once he scored that goal.
I played a game the other night into Farmers, and Shark just locked me down, and it was, you know, there was nothing you could do. The game was over at that point. Once he hits that second goal, legendary Gut and String and everything, it's fucking gross, man.
Yeah.
This is a very sensible change.
It's a good start. I like this as a rider already. Very nice.
Okay. Well, then
Shall we move on
to the original version of Siren. So there's a couple of things that we wanted to have think about with Siren. One of the things that particularly got raised from certain members of the dev team that I had personal experience of is that she's actually got a really strong kickoff. In that if you actually choose to kick off with original Siren, if the opponent immediately chooses to pick up the ball and leaves that ball on a model with a good kick stat, then Siren has a lot of range to just jog or sprint forwards, use Seduced to retrieve the ball. And because she's retrieving the ball with a pass action with Seduced, she can then dodge backwards. She can then pass the ball off to another friendly model, make another dodge backwards, and suddenly she's almost back on her deployment line with the ball, and she kicked off in the first place, and it didn't really particularly seem fair. So we looked at a couple of different things, whether we wanted to change Seduced or not. What didn't seem the right call for a number of different reasons, we ended up settling on reducing her influence attribute. So we actually reduced her maximum influence cap from 4 to 3. So she still can use Seduced. She can walk and use Seduced, but it uses up all of her influence, so that when she does that in this situation where she's kicked off, she can in theory get the ball back. One, she won't be able to sprint and use Seduced because she won't have enough influence to do that. But if she uses a jog and then uses Seduced to retrieve the ball, she can dodge backwards, but she then won't have an extra influence to pass the ball to a friendly model. So particularly for the first turn, this is quite an important change. For the rest of the game, Siren's still just as useful as ever in terms of retrieving the ball, and particularly that her ability to charge and trigger Seduced from the playbook is completely untouched. So it means that if you want to play a little bit of a slightly more risky play style with Siren, have a charge into a model or just walk into melee if she's got enough of the attack buff, use Seduced from the playbook, and then if she does that, she will then have enough influence probably to pass the ball on afterwards and do all the kind of funky stuff that you've always done with Siren. So
Yeah, it seems to be a risk-reward kind of change. I mean, you can kick off, you can charge, get the Seduce off, but then at that point you shoot, try to take a goal, but you're giving up the 2 points because you're sitting Siren in their backfield. So I think it's probably a fair trade.
Yeah, I mean, it was sticking to the theme a little bit of just making the Fishman player think a little bit more about their options, which is certainly working from the majority of the Fishman team, but with Shark and Siren, we just wanted to make the Fishman player, or Fishman coach rather, think a little bit more about the things they're doing rather than sort of do the fire and forget cruise missiles that they've previously been able to do.
So. Yeah, and it's a similar kind of influence drop that, was it Shank got in the last kind of one, in terms of just dialing them back where they can't get everything off, you know, they can't do all the things they want to do. It makes them, you know, make a choice at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a game where we try to give you as many options as we can, but we also at times like to make you make choices. We don't want to give you all the answers at once because then the game would be too easy.
Yeah. So. No, very nice. Very nice. I'm still liking it.
Good. Okay, so we're down to Veteran Siren. So it's both versions of Siren again, a little bit tweak in this errata. In terms of Veteran Siren, it wasn't necessarily so much of a balance issue that she was just doing things that were quite unintended, in that because she had a short playbook of three columns and she's got attack of four and she's got momentous damage options on that playbook on the third column, I believe, and she's actually able to wrap her playbook relatively easily because the Fishermen have quite a large amount of 2-inch melee zones. They've also got a couple of defense debuffs and not bad access to knockdown. So there's actually quite a couple of simple methods of boosting her attack up quite significantly so that she can wrap her playbook multiple times. And the issue that the thing that we didn't really want her doing is we haven't dropped her damage at all. We've just removed the momentum from her playbook options. We've actually written a new playbook for her where she's got still got her two damage options. She's actually got a four column long playbook now, but there's no momentum on her playbook damage results is the word I'm looking for, so that she can still come in and do some damage, but she's not going to come in and damage an enemy player and get a shed load of momentum at the same time. It's just not an intended playstyle for the Fishermen to have. You're supposed to have a little bit of access to that playstyle with Corsair, but you're not also supposed to be able to double dip that with your players as well.
She was a wrecking ball how she was previously. This seems quite reasonable. Like the non-momentous damage, you can still whip out the damage like you say, and you're probably going to wrap properly set up, but you're not going to be egregiously abusing her, I suppose.
No, I mean, she still also retains the momentous playbook triggers for pushes, dodges, a push dodge, well, not dodges, but a push dodge and some pushes, and also for Dread Gaze as well. Obviously, Dread Gaze still got a nice momentum trigger, momentous playbook trigger on the second column.
I mean, I can quite easily see a scenario where she triggers the momentous Dread Gaze and gets a bit of non-momentous damage. That seems all right. You know, she's not printing a shed load of momentum now, so that seems quite reasonable.
Yeah, it's just a combination of not being able to damage, you do heaps of damage and heaps of momentum at the same time.
Oh, that's good.
Valid. All right, let's move on. Fish players are a little bit sad. Should we move on to someone else?
Sure, well, let's make someone else sad. No, that's a really bad way.
I reckon you're about to be.
Okay, then let's not do that. No, let's go on to the next one. So the next one coming up, big one, is, when people are talking about sort of the wider meta game of Guild Ball at the moment, they not only talk about Shark, but people also talk about Midas. So Midas is the next one that's on this errata list. The thing with Midas is, we actually quite like the flavour that we've got Midas and the sort of the flavour and playstyle we've got Midas 2 now. He did see quite a big rewrite going into Season 3, so we haven't really wanted to change his playstyle much at all. It's just that he is, frankly, just a little bit too good at all the things that he wants to do. In addition to that, he's actually got quite a lot of rules on his cards, quite a lot of text there, so it can be a little bit difficult for newer players to pick up and play with sometimes. So we've done, the changes we've made have been have gone for a couple of different aims. One is to definitely bring his power level down just a notch, and to also just remove some of the superfluous rules from his card to make him a little bit easier to read, a little bit easier to pick up. So the things we've done is we've removed Lightfooted from the back of his card, so he no longer has that character trait. We've also removed entirely Super Shot from his card as well, which is going to force him to come 2 inches closer to the enemy gold to be able to shoot, so he can't just be banging in shots from 10 inches away anymore. And Lure of Gold has also become once per turn, so he can't just move up multiple players with Lure of Gold. This is particularly important, this one on turn one, where he can sort of bring up Vitriol and like Veteran Catalyst and put enormous amounts of pressure on the enemy team like from the off, which not a lot of other people can do. And the last one is Promise of Fortune, his heroic play. We've actually removed the armor bonus from Promise of Fortune, so it now just gives him, is effectively a heroic acrobatic. It gives him a 2-inch dodge for the expenditure of a momentum point. So what you can see that we've done there is we haven't actually affected the sort of the dynamism of his playstyle at all. He's still a very dynamic captain to play with. He can still go sort of in and out of melee zones almost at will because he's got very easy access to push dodges, and he's got this really nice heroic play to be able to dodge around. But he's lost a little bit of resilience. And he's just got to work a little bit harder when it comes to scoring goals, but he's still very much a very successful goal scorer, and I imagine we'll be seeing a lot of Midas still.
Yeah, coming from an Alchemist player, he definitely needed a nerf. I loved playing him because I just knew how powerful he was. But things like light-footed, thematically, I'm not sure why he had it. I don't think he needed it. And, you know, really does bring him back to the levels of your Pin Vices, that kind of thing. Like 5-0 is still a very good defensive line, you know, stat line. 5-1 is pretty gross.
Yeah, and he's also got the unpredictable movement on top of that as well, so he can just be very difficult to also pin down sometimes. Also, really easy access to that push dodge can be very good defensively as well with counterattacks.
That's what I was going to say. Anytime they come into you with unpredictable, and then, you know, 1-inch models can't actually touch him. So it's, you know, I still think he does all right.
Something else to point out, which was kind of relevant for Shark, but not to as much of an extent, and it's something that kind of was part of the aim for this entire errata, is that when we were going through and picking which models should and shouldn't be on this errata, something that we particularly took a close look at was captain models. And when you think about it, when you're choosing your roster, you have just percentages. You have quite a lot of different squaddy models, just a lot of different, like, you know, non-captain, non-mascot, or aka squaddy models to choose from. When it comes to your captains, you have to take one of these two models. You're forced into one of the two of them. So if one of those model, if one of those captain models is, you know, quite significantly seen as a slightly worse option than the other captain model, then that's going to dramatically affect the variety of different teams you can play, because you have such a limited choice in captains. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So that was something that Matt mentioned last time we spoke to him as well. He was concerned about making sure that, you know, each captain in a guild had a good chance of being played, an equal chance of being played.
So when it comes to Midas, that's one of the things that's also at the forefront of our thinking, is that we don't see a smoke almost as much as we'd like. And the thing is that when we analyse smoke, we don't really see smoke as the issue there. Smoke is actually a really nice model, and we're quite happy with how the power level of her and how she plays, her interactions, etc. It's actually Midas that needed to come down a little bit rather than smoke being pushed up a little bit.
Could have given smoke like tax 6, she would have been fine.
could have, should have, would have. We could also have given her just a one long playbook. That would have been totally fine.
That looks pretty good. I mean, you've done what you've set out to achieve, I think. Just dialed back that power curve to the right point.
Yeah, and we talked about it beforehand, but the interesting part about Midas is that, like, and I'm an Alchemist player, I'll still play him. He's still easily good enough. I don't think he's been dialed back to the point where you go, oh, not sure, but he definitely answers that. I think I might play a bit more smoke or work out which matchup she favours. So, yeah, really good.
It reminds me of the fillet change that you made, in the sense that she went from disgusting to, you know, as powerful as any other captain. I mean, I feel like you've done something similar.
Yeah, that's the aim we're trying to get to, is at least have to try and have all of the captains in one guild to try and be at least on par with each other. So that at least within your guild, you've got a reasonably fair choice between the two different ones. They can play into different matchups, or they will at least be played roughly a similar amount of time. So you're not going to get like a perfect, you're going to get like a perfect 50-50, exactly half the games being played, but we're trying to want to try and get as close to it as possible.
So the next player that you have errated is Vitriol.
Yeah, this one's probably not going to come as a huge surprise to too many people. I mean, Vitriol's arguably in sort of her previous, now as of today, in her previous form, is arguably one of the best sort of non-captain strikers in the game. An amazing suite of abilities, which got really lovely 2-inch melee zone, excellent options for momentum generation because of a high tack, and excellent options for disengaging melee as well because of momentous push dodge on her too. For some reason, and also really good ability to damage players, because she had a damage buff on the back of her card in hidden damage, and very low access to a 2 damage on her playbook. Super fast on top of that as well, a really fast sprint of 9, ability to make that even faster with Cover Darkness, just very, very strong. I mean, clone, defense 5, just there's not a lot that's kind of that you dislike there. Not that you meant to dislike any models there, but every model is supposed to have a weakness, and she didn't seem to have an obvious one. So we needed to bring her down a little bit in different places, and we also saw it as an opportunity to bring a little bit of theme back to the model as well. But Vitriol, one of the Alchemist models that doesn't sort of sing Alchemist skill theme to you too much when you read her at first. So we've done a couple of different things. So we've removed Cover of Darkness and Hidden Damage in their entirety. They're both gone, completely gone. We haven't changed any of her base stats. Her attributes have all remained the same. We have, however, edited her playbook. So she no longer has any momentous damage, and her non-momentous 2 damage has been moved up to the third column. So she no longer has that capacity to just take 4 influence and either score a goal if the ball's nearby, or just finish off any random enemy model that happened to be on 8 boxes or lower, because she could just walk up and poke them for that 2 damage multiple times. So she's no longer able to do that, because she probably shouldn't be able to do that. On top of that, we wanted to bring down her resilience to touch, because she's got fantastic counterattacks in a 2-inch melee zone and a good tack. She also has clone, one of the best sort of active defensive abilities in the game. And 12 health points to defense 5 is actually a much more resilient stat line than it first appears, particularly with Clone and a good counter-attack ability on top. So we've reduced her health to 10 boxes. We didn't take Clone off her. We've actually chosen to reduce her health instead. So that it's kind of pushing the Alchemist player in this case to be more offensive, more aggressive, and win the initiative. And if you can keep going first with the Alchemist and you can keep getting Clone up, then Vitra will be safe. But as soon as the Alchemists start to lose the initiative, or if you lose a particular initiative roll halfway through the game, then suddenly Vitriol's going to be in a bit of danger, and she becomes a little bit more of a risk-reward piece in that sense. So after taking that stuff away from her, we then wanted to add something back to it because we saw an opportunity for, we've taken a lot of text off this model, we can put something a little bit more thematic back onto it. And in part of the backstory of Vitriol, she actually has a bit of a bad story in terms of getting part of her face burned off with some acid, and then I believe the laboratory that she's working at the time actually gets burned down. So she actually has a new trait that's called I've Been Burnt Before, which is at the start of this model activation, choose a model that is suffering the burning condition or the poison condition that is within this model's melee zone. This model may then immediately make a 2-inch dodge away from the chosen model. So someone on fire or burning or on poison near her, and she's going, I need to get away from you, and she'll just go away.
That's
all right. So something I've not touched on as well, and I'll just sort of get the big blurb out of the way, is that one of the things that we hear about Vitriol quite a lot is that, similarly to Siren actually, is that she's a very strong model on the kickoff previously. That's because you can walk her forward 6 inches with the ball, doing the kickoff action. You can then kick the ball over the line a small distance. And as long as you've placed her within an inch of an obstruction, then she's starting her first activation, triggering Cover of Darkness, which means that she has an 8-11 move and a 2-inch melee zone on top of that. So she's actually got an enormous threat range to come and recover the ball and either immediately score a goal because she's got good momentum generation, or just protect the ball with Clone or kick it back towards her own players. Another almost impressively strong change.
I'm super sad you took that away. I'm super sad. I used to love doing that to people.
Yeah, I'm not sure your opponent loved that, though.
No. In fact, I could name a few. Absolutely. No, and I think it was egregious. You know, the ability to have a 13-inch threat range off the bat, off a kickoff, she was arguably one of the best kickoff models in the game by far.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Iron Captains, obviously.
I was just saying, what you've been left with now is actually a lot of those things I was talking about before, her 2-inch melee zone, a very good tack for a striker model, very easy access to momentous push dodges, Clone, all of these things have been left on her. She still has an excellent striker toolkit, but she now has some weaknesses, some counterplay that you can play into, which just weren't there before.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm not an Alchemist player, but I can see a situation where you've got Catalyst who likes to burn, or Venom who likes to be poisoned, and you can use that to your advantage in setting up Vitriol to effectively give her a pseudo-shadow like at the start of her activation.
You absolutely can, yes. Mm. Yeah.
That seems interesting.
Yep, and that's something that's intended as well, is that, I mean, so if you wanted to, it was making sure that we didn't make the kickoff as egregious as before, which is why it's got the trigger of it having to be within her melee zone. Also makes quite good thematic sense that if she's getting too close to someone on fire, then she's not happy about it. But yes, it's not enemy models that are burning or poisoned. It's any model around her that is burning or poisoned. So you can follow her around with friendly models that are on fire or poisoned and trigger this yourself if you want to, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I like it on the whole. I think one of the interesting ones is the maintaining the tack bonus, because, you know, that was something that was fantastic as a player. And by removing that kind of damage or the hidden damage, it means you'll just use it for the abilities she should actually be using it for, you know, the dodges, the clones, that kind of thing. But she still has that high tack, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it seems to be one of the parts of her identity that we needed to protect, and that what makes her unique as a striker, and that she, you know, her having tack 5 or tack 6 when the opposing model is in cover makes her a little bit unique. And I think it does give her one of the highest non-captain strike attacks.
I think it does.
Yeah, I mean, she can still whip out the damage like a boss, so just not...
But it's that choice thing, isn't it?
No, it seems sensible, given her role on the pitch. Do you have anything else you want to cry about, Cam, for that?
Look, I think it's justified. I'm actually surprised that I was expecting that kind of change to the damage side of things in the last one. I know before the last one, where hidden damage just became like a once per turn, you had to kind of nominate, you know, on a charge... I was surprised that didn't just go altogether. But I think getting rid of the momentous damage is key, because I used to love, you know, getting a whole bunch of crowds, using a guy like Harry and Catalyst, or a few 2-inch melees like Naja, and then she just whips out momentous damage on the 5 column, you know, 3 at a time. It's pretty good. So I think that's a pretty positive change, because that's not what she should be doing.
I agree. Fucking vitriol. Ugh. I mean, I still hate her, but I hate her a little bit less, so that's good. Now, this is a big one. This kind of falls in line with your stated intent to make each captain an equal opportunity player. You've errated Ox.
We have. So this is Captain Ox rather than Veteran Ox. Mm-hmm. And as a reverse of what you've got with Midas and Smoke, where we wanted to bring Midas down a little bit, then we're looking at Fillet and Ox. And as you noted before, the change we made to Fillet, we feel are still very appropriate, and that we've just made her into a balanced but powerful model, and that actually it's Ox that needed to come up a little bit rather than Fillet going down anymore. So yeah, we had a look at Ox, and the interesting thing about Ox is he's probably one of the easiest models to errata, really, because he's got such a really cool, interesting suite of abilities that we didn't need to do that many complicated changes to him. The thing we did need to do was have a look at his playbook. So what Ox has kind of always meant to Steamforge since the beginning of Guild Ball is that he's always been referred to as one of the sort of spectrums of the game, the extremes of the spectrum. So when people are first being spoken about, being introduced to Guild Ball, one of the things that they learn about is this: on the one end of the spectrum of the game, you've got these footballing captains like Shark and Midas as well, people that can score goals very, very easily, but don't have as much of a combat game. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got people like Ox that will represent, this is a much more pure model that will come in and just tear your face off. And he can kick the ball if it happens to be anywhere near him, but he's kind of more interested in planting his axe in people's faces.
Valid.
The thing that's happened with Ox more recently is that other models have, I don't want to say eclipsed, but other models have sort of gone past him a little bit in terms of how much damage they can cause. They've outshone him a little bit more than we intended for them to do so, and we still would like Ox to represent this extreme of the spectrum where he is one of the best fighters out there. And the way in which we can do that is we don't need to increase or change any of the other abilities on his player card. We just need to have a look at the damage on his playbook. Like, the owner is still a fantastically strong ability. He's still got one of the simplest but most effective legendary players in the game, and he's got a very nice suite of character play as well, Butchery, to push the damage even further. Tough skin as well, very handy for a butcher's team. And yeah, so we just need to have a good playbook. One of the biggest things and simplest things that we've done is that two momentous two damage that you do see some complaints about sometimes, because it is so high and he's kind of paying a tax for having the owner. That momentous two damage playbook results come down from the fourth column to the third column. Now that doesn't sound like a huge change, but people that have played Ox multiple times will know how often you miss out on that fourth column by one result, and it hurts so much every time it happens. And it just wasn't fair to him anymore. In addition to that, we've also increased the damage of his playbook at the top end. So not only has that two come down by a column, I believe the three has come down by a column as well, momentous three, and we've added a momentous four right at the end. So if you get into somebody that's on the ground with like attack buff on them or a defense debuff, on his legendary play turn, he can come in, hit that momentous four, and suddenly he's doing six damage in one whack, bang, and they'll just tear people to pieces. So, you know, if you're playing against Ox Butchers, then losing the initiative to an Ox Butcher team is certainly something to be afraid of once again, I think.
Absolutely. And even if he hits the, you know, I've noticed that the Butchery has come down one column as well. So if he can get the Butchery on the charge, and then you get four attacks, that you may be getting up to, you know, even if you just get to your column three, that's still 20 damage momentous. So
yeah,
that's
it's okay. It's also had a damage bump, I think. That trigger has gone from like a 2 to a 3.
Yes.
So imagine just going in and, pardon me, on legendary turn, and knowing that the person you're in front of is just going to be taken out. Like, that's not even like a mathematical question. It's just going to happen because he's got so many attack buffs. And you're just going, you know what? I happen to have hit so high, I'm just going to butchery that guy over there as well. Oh, by the way, I also did 5 damage to you. And then just setting up the next dude for being taken out. Like, this guy can do some work.
Yeah, I like it. I like how subtle the change is too. Just, you know, slight changes. I mean, I think anyone that does the maths on, you know, your attack versus your playbook, you know, 7 against, you know, 3 to 4. 3 and 4 is the tipping point when you're rolling dice on kind of an average model. So I can definitely see where momentous 2 on the 3 is much better than on the 4.
Yeah.
He's going to wreck face. It's going to be great. I can't wait to see him go in on Thresher and just do a number on him. Having been Threshered recently.
You really don't like Thresher, do you?
No, I like him a lot, but I also like to see him put into the dirt. I think this will do it.
Yeah, you like him when he's walking off the pitch because he's been taken out, is what you're saying. You like seeing the back of him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. No, he looks good. I reckon I'll give Ox a go. Looks like a lot of fun. Ooh, Campbell. Can see the next one.
I'm happy with this next one. Oh. Yeah, yeah. This is a model that I think a lot of people have been talking about that just needed something extra. I know I forgot his name. There's a German lad that plays this model and wrecks absolute face with him.
That'll be Daniel Naus, good friend of mine. Yeah, he so Daniel Naus came over for Vengeance. At least it probably is Daniel Naus anyway. And he
yes, it is.
I've known him for quite a while because I used to play other games with him. And he came over and he played me a practice game the night before Vengeance because I was refereeing the next day. And even this is with old hammer, by the way, not even you know, obviously because in public. I'm just like, guys, it's fine. I've got Obulus sat here on full health. I mean, he's got Obulus singled out, but that should probably be fine. He's got some models nearby him. He's got some. He shouldn't be able to kill him with hammer there. He's got to beat back a couple of times, or knock back, sorry, to get back to him. And he actually gets to Obulus with singled out on Obulus and just Iron Fist to +1 damage on himself. I think he only had 3 attacks, just killed him from full health. It's like, what? What? I mean, I helped make this game, and I don't understand what just happened, Dan. But anyway, but Dan would probably be an exception to the rule because he's an exceptional player. And for the most case with Hammer, we needed to take a look at him to bring him up a little bit because he's a little bit difficult, again, for newer players to get to grips with at first. And particularly when you think about different interactions with, like, knockback and learning how to use knockback into interaction with, you know, pushes on your playbooks and how that all works together, the timing of it. And if you think about it, it's sort of a momentous damage result with a push and triggering knockback is kind of 4 separate instances to it, where it's got momentum gain, damage, a push, and then knockback trigger all at once. It's kind of 4 things trigger at once. It can be a bit overwhelming for newer players. But anyway, we took a look at him in whole, and we just wanted to simplify him a little bit, and also actually bring up his power level just a touch. In terms of his versatility is where we've done that, because the Masons are kind of known as this guild of tactical flexibility and versatility, and it was a distinct lack of that with Hammer when in comparison to Honor, so we wanted to increase Hammer's pick rate, you know, in comparison to Honor. We wanted to see Hammer get played more often, therefore we've got to increase his versatility because it's important to the guild as a whole. So after all that, what we've done to him is we've done a couple of playbook edits to him where we've actually just tried to simplify his playbook in general. I wouldn't say that his damage is particularly increased, but if he's actually got a lot less options on that playbook, which are all still quite powerful options, but they should hopefully not have people just staring at the playbook wondering which option to choose anywhere near as much when it comes to Hammer. And then something else we've done as well is we've increased the range of his 3 character plays. It's all been increased from 4-inch range to 6-inch range, so he can trigger Iron Fist or Ball Hog or Punishing March, aka Selfish Legs, from a much greater distance now, so he's a bit easy to use along with his team. And in keeping with that sort of 6-inch theme, we've replaced Hammer Time the heroic with Hammer Time the legendary play, which is now a 6-inch aura.
I love this. I absolutely love this.
The issue, unfortunately, as much as I did love the previous heroic, is that it just Mason's team just isn't influence efficient enough to make a huge amount of use for it, because every time you wanted to use the old heroic, you had to pay more and more influence to get these buffs, which meant that you were spending less and less influence on actually making attacks and benefiting from these abilities. So instead, what we've done is we've given him a legendary play where it's an aura that when friendly models activate within this aura, so it doesn't affect Hammer himself, but when other friendly models activate within the aura, they can choose one of the buffs of his character plays to have for free. It's only once per game because it's legendary, but they get it for free. They're not having to pay for it anymore. So when a model activates, it can choose either to have +2/+2 move, +1 damage to playbook damage results, i.e. Iron Fist, or +1/+0 kick, i.e. Ball Hog.
Yeah, I love this. I love this.
And it's allowing each model to choose individually when they activate as well. So it's not one buff and then everyone gets the same buff. You actually can choose, pick and choose which one you want. So you probably don't want +1 damage on Flint, for instance. You're probably going to pick the distance or the kick buff, for instance. So yeah, lots of tactical flexibility there for you.
What I like about that, and simply for me it was the change from a heroic to a legendary, is the fact that, I mean, the best way to play into Hammer was to basically isolate him or keep pushing him away. So there were pretty straightforward counters. And then it was really difficult if you didn't have momentum to get the heroic off if you wanted to actually just trigger and then buff your team. Whereas this gives that ability. Hammer can still go first, and if you've got all your other models in advantageous positions, he can literally just, you know, pop the legendary, move up, maybe do a couple of punches or whatever, but then you get the benefit without having to spend the momentum to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, I think a general increase in both tactical flexibility and efficiency is going to help out Hammer quite a lot, I would hope.
Yeah, no, it looks awesome. I'm looking forward to wrecking face. I like the momentous one on the one too. I think that, you know, for Masons where they've got all the momentum at the bottom end of the playbook, I think that makes sense. I always found that a bit odd that his momentous one was on the two. He still had the one on the one, but it just didn't seem quite right.
Yeah, as you say, I mean, that's elements of simplification, just doing things that make sense to people and going, that doesn't really make sense to me, and I mean, I can look at his playbook now and go, I kind of understand why he's got all of these different results. I mean, and I think something that people should be quite excited about, and it's actually quite a funny thing, is that momentous knockdown tackle he's got on too.
Yes. Is that the first time that's happened?
It is the first time that's happened, and that's a pretty awesome result for just whenever he's going into people. He's probably going to go in there with the intent of damaging people, but if they happen to also have the ball, he's just going to absorb the ball for his team as well, if he uses that result. So.
Brilliant.
It looks good.
Can I take a step back quickly and just say, or ask, have you noticed in this kind of errata or redevelopment that you have looked at the reduction of the playbooks in terms of, you know, having multiple results and just trying to simplify them?
Yeah, it's something that it's been a big focus of the development team for sort of the last sort of 6 months or so, is that we wanted to take a step back and just have a look and go, hang on, we've kind of let ourselves get a little bit creatively carried away with some of these playbooks we've made, and we were noticing from feedback, which is absolutely, you know, very fair and honest from the community, and we're very glad to have it, is that newer players were starting to struggle with some of the newer models that we were releasing, because they were having these incredibly complex playbooks that, you know, more experienced players are going, oh, this is fantastic, I can do X, Y, and Z with this, it's really cool, these really weird, cool interactions, and that was fun for us to play with as well, because we're all the people that have been around playing Gear Ball since the beginning, or even for a long time, are used to this kind of thing, and they love to see something that's different, but it takes away a little bit from people coming into the game for the first time, and we would like even for our newer models to be as new player friendly as possible. And just to sort of change tack for a little bit from this errata, it's something that we've purposely tried to do with both the farmers and the blacksmiths, is that toward the end of both of those development cycles, we went back and had another look through all of those player cards and just tried to make sure that we added in elements of new player friendliness where possible. And we would hope that's certainly evident in playbooks, like brand new abilities and how we word them, and just how a model operates on the table. So yeah. Yes, we're quite keenly aware that we need to be bringing up new player friendliness where possible, and this errata was just another opportunity for us to take another look at these models that were already on the errata list anyway and just go, hang on, we can probably also do a little bit of simplification work just while we're here because we've got the opportunity to. So
I like that. Buff and shine. Nice.
Yeah.
The next one's a very interesting one, and one that I reckon a lot of people have been talking about, maybe tipped into that overpowered kind of category. Is the man with the biggest wrench and a glorious hat.
Yeah.
What'd you do to Harry? What was he doing that you didn't like?
Everything.
It's not the fact that we said once again as an alchemist player.
the issue with Harry the Hat is he wasn't. If you take a look at all of his individual abilities, he's not particularly overpowered in any individual thing that he does. The problem with Harry, in an almost similar way to Vitriol, is that he just kind of was good at everything. He didn't really have very much of a downside. We needed to make sure that he had a downside, because he just then becomes an infinitely more interesting player when it comes to tactical decision making, whether you put him in your team or not. You do want him for certain things, you don't want him for other things. That's fine. We want to create that sort of push-pull of wanting to take certain players at certain times and perhaps not at other times. So we had a couple of different things we could do with Harry, and we needed to go back and decide what elements of him did we want to be his weakness. There were so many different strengths that we could look at and turn into a weakness. And the thing that we wanted him to be definitely doing on the pitch was to be this sort of melee support model, which means he gets to keep his 3-inch melee zone. That was something that people thought might come away, and it didn't. He gets to keep his 3-inch melee zone. But what we did do is we removed Crazy from him. We stabilized his tack at 5, so he can no longer bump that up Crazy. It's going to be just 5 all the time. We also shortened his playbook down to 5 columns, and the contents of that playbook have changed quite dramatically as well. He only has momentous damage right at the top. He's got a momentous 3 at the top of his playbook. The rest of it is all focused on momentous pushes, momentous knockdowns. He has a 1 and a 2 damage. Both of those are non-momentous. He is meant to be coming in and shoving people around with this big wrench that he's got, knocking people down, and he is for lack of a better phrase, the more egregious things he was doing previously was not only knocking people down and shoving them around momentously, but he was also damaging people on top of that. So that, for example, he used to have a momentous 2 damage double push result on his 4th column, which once he's knocked down an opposing model, he's going to hit very easily, assuming that he's used Crazy. So he's shoving people around, doing this sort of support work that we want him to do, but also landing extra damage on top of people that just didn't really need to be there, because he's got such a strong suite of abilities otherwise, you know, Rising Anger, and low down momentous double pushes, meaning that he's really difficult to attack. Some people just don't want to go near him because he's a problematic model to attack. Good counter attacks, and he's generating momentum for the enemy team with Rising Anger. Goad, quite a powerful control ability, particularly against low defense enemy models, where you can you can direct their placement on the board, on the pitch rather, and Molotov as well. You know, quite a low cost, nice ability to set people on fire. Another sort of mild control element to the pitch because it stays in play. It's an ongoing effect area that stays on the pitch, and the hat itself, the inspiring hat, very nice ability for footballing teams, and we're happy for him to have all these different aspects and flavor to the guy. We just didn't also want him coming in and wrecking face in melee as well. Yeah. We'd like to see the emphasis on Harry become that he does have a 2-inch melee zone, but it's almost like a fisherman 2-inch melee zone, where it's kind of there for other people to use as a ganging up benefit, and that he's just someone that is a pain to deal with for the opponent, and he's also got a really nice toolbox to go with his wrench. Really nice toolbox abilities. Worst pun in the world.
That's shocking.
Anyway, so yes, that's Harry.
See, I feel conflicted about this because I love Harry. I love him. Mm.
So now you know where I sit with all the other ones.
Yeah. Losing access to that TAC 7 is probably what hurts the most, I think. But yep. I understand your reasoning. Certainly the way that you've reshifted the playbook, moving the non-momentous 2 from the 2 column to the 3 column seems sensible. And getting rid of the momentous 2 double push, that was just insane. That was so good. But I do feel like he competes with Benediction for a slot now.
Yeah, and that's a good thing. We want some more competition between different models. These Benediction and Harry have, as you pointed out, a little bit of a similar role. They do have a different enough suite of abilities, we think, for that to be okay. Certainly one of the things that we talked about during the process of this, of the development of the Errata, and that we're happy with the level of competition between those two models.
Yeah, I think Rising Anger and the Inspiring Hat and the Goad and the Mon. I mean, it's a hell of a toolbox. And yes, I can't see. I feel conflicted. Like, what do I take? What sort of team do I build? How do I want to play this? And I think that's probably exactly what you're aiming for.
Yes, precisely. Precisely.
Very interesting, Perkins. You're a sneaky man. The next pair of models is probably going to cause a lot of interest. Avarice and Greed, you poured petrol on them, set them on fire, claimed insurance, used that money to build an entirely new set of players.
I mean, that's one way to describe it. Perhaps not the one I'd go with.
Flavor text.
Absolutely. So Avarice and Greed have had quite a weird journey through the life of Guild Ball, and one of the things that we're doing as a company, I'm just going to move away from Avarice and Greed for a second to explain some backstory, is that we're trying to bring all the elements of Steamforge a bit closer together. There are a number of us that work remotely. Sherwin, Matt Hart, for instance, both work remotely from the main office, so we try to keep in constant contact, Skype calls, etc. And DC as well works remotely in America. We try to bring the team closer together as possible so that we are working more closely together and that we can overlap each other, etc. And just assist each other with more work, bounce ideas off each other more easily, increase communication across the team. And one of the things that's arisen out of that is that, from speaking to Sherwin some more, is that Avarice and Greed have almost never really reflected their in canon characters, their story characters, which is much more these sort of back alley thugs than these ridiculously long range striking duo that you've seen on the pitch. So there's a sort of two-pronged assault when it comes to Avarice and Greed here. One is that, yes, they were doing things that were a little bit too good on the pitch previously. And on top of that, we also saw an opportunity to just go, these guys have drifted for a number of different reasons. They have drifted significantly from their original concept. Let's take them right back to concept. What are these guys supposed to be doing? And what they're supposed to be is these back alley thugs that will just pair up together and just beat people into the dirt when no one's looking. And Greed is sort of leader of this pair, and he will, because he's just a little dude that can't really beat people up on his own, just not physically able to do that. So he leans on Avarice quite a lot and goes, Avarice, you need to beat the hell out of this guy over here. We've got a contract for this guy's name or whatever. I'm going to go beat him up. And his new abilities are centralized around doing that. And he will just point at someone, Avarice. It's literally why Greed actually now has singled out as well, to really represent that, as opposed to Avarice having it. And Avarice will go and just be the melee beater. He will deal some serious damage to people and just kick the teeth in. So it's quite a long list in terms of what we have. In terms of looking at this in errata, it's probably not quite right, because there's a long list of things that we have changed, haven't changed. Instead, we should probably just view these guys as two new models that you should probably go and have a look at and spend some time thinking about. There's a lot of things going on here. So I'm just going to run through some of the sort of the overall aspects to them rather than sort of go through each change in depth. So Greed's probably taken the most changes to him, where he doesn't really have as much of a kicking ability anymore. His tack has been reduced as well because it's not very fitting for this guy that's a bit more of a director than a fighter himself. He's lost both of his character players previously. And he's actually had InSync removed as well. He has to have influence on him to use for himself. What he does do now is that when he can be actually allocated influence while he's off the pitch. So if Greed starts the turn off the pitch, attached to Avarice, then you can actually allocate influence to him to use when he jumps down onto the pitch. And his main use now is when he's nearby Avarice, he gives Avarice, extra buffs depending on his proximity to. So one of the things that Matt Hart specifically asked us to do with this new Avarice and Greed is to give two interesting sort of playstyles, or modes rather, that we have to have an interesting playstyle to play Avarice whilst Greed is attached, and an interesting playstyle to play Avarice and Greed both when Greed is not attached and on the pitch. So when Greed is attached to Avarice, Avarice actually has a static plus two attack, which is a replacement of his old many hands make light work. He just has plus two attack because literally Avarice is Greed is attached to Avarice, and he's just saying, go and hit that dude over there. Avarice does it, and it's kind of representing Avarice having permanent single now. We've reduced his attack to 5 and reshaped his playbook a little bit to account for that, but I'll let you guys dig into that kind of in your own time rather than dig into it in here. When Greed actually detaches and is on the ground, Avarice gets two different buffs. Instead of having this static plus 2 attack, Greed can attack people to put singled out upon them, which obviously benefits other members of their team as well, because they can also benefit from real singled out. And he also has a trait on Avarice called Thuggery. What Thuggery does is, while Greed is within an inch of Avarice and on the pitch, so it doesn't trigger when Greed is attached, Avarice gains just a static plus one damage to playbook damage results, and he also just gets to add an extra knockdown result whenever Avarice makes a successful attack. So literally means that any result that Avarice does on his playbook also has a knockdown on top of it. So you get a really funny momentous knockdown. Ha! Sturdy. Doesn't matter anymore. Or momentous one damage knockdown from the first bit. What that's meant to thematically represent is this quite comical idea that DC had, where he actually liked the idea that if they were going to go and knock someone over, Greed would run around behind them and kneel down, and then Avarice is literally pushing them over Greed and then just beating them up while they're on the floor.
Brilliant.
And that's where this sort of thuggery idea has come from. Also, side point, because I had to actually go and actually look that up in case we wanted to use it as the ability name. Do you know what that's actually called when you do that to someone? It's called table topping. That sounds like sort of angry pirate levels of stuff, which I'm absolutely not going to go into right now, but that is definitely does not sound like a clean name. But yeah. Anyway, so we've got this funny idea of like them tabletopping people by pushing people over Greed, and then yeah, so we just thought it was a very nice way to represent this sort of back alley thugs that they are now, and that's kind of them in a sort of more concise way.
Yeah, I mean they've retained their, I don't want to say complexity, but their depth completely different now, which is great. Greed's obviously not a striker anymore, doesn't have the mobility, but I can see them working as quite a formidable duo. I love the idea that Greed can now be dropped off and picked up, you know, in the same activation. That looks really good. Yeah.
I like the fact that you don't get a penalty for the influence either, so Avarice can have him. You get that plus two attack, and Avarice can start with the two influence, so you're not losing that.
Yeah, we want to give you the freedom of choice that you didn't have to have Greed on the table if you didn't want to, but we've given you this really nice ability in Thuggery where you are sort of, and also being able to just single out models on one hit with Greed himself. You've got some really nice reasons for having Greed out on the table, but it's entirely up to you how you want to play these models. You can play them attached, play them detached. It's kind of, it's your choice, really. We've given you some good reasons to do both things at different times.
I do like that momentous one at one on Avarice's book as well. I think that's really good. Because you can see them whipping out the damage now. Even on a wrap, you know, if you're sort of making your way all around the playbook and back again, that's going to be really efficient.
I can see him working with, not necessarily your Harrys, but, someone that gets the crowd, you get the singled out, you get the thuggery, it all just goes nuts, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, something I didn't touch on during my explanation there is that attach and detach is now controlled through character plays. So detach has been replaced by a character play called Drop Me Off, which is on Avarice, costs 0 for you to be able to put Greed out. You can do that any point during your turn because it's a character play. And then Greed has a cost 1 character play called Pick Me Up. So if you want to have Greed on the table but not risk him being taken out, you can make sure Greed has that one influence left over to be able to be picked up again after they've finished kicking someone's head in.
Nice. So you're thuggery and then he picks him back up. Nice.
Yep.
You trade I guess you trade influence use and damage for greed's safety. You know, that ability to deny the easy takeout with greed, that seems really good.
Yeah, yeah. We're just making sure that someone pays the appropriate influence to be able to do that, and that they're not spending that on momentum generation, making extra attacks, kicking the ball, etc., but specifically to protect greed.
Yeah, so. Yeah. No, looks good. Now, this next model is a model that has generated probably the most controversy in the history of Guild Ball. And
I mean, don't hype it up anymore.
No, I don't know that I could, Perkins. I don't know that I could. Theron, a guild that is near and dear to both your heart and my heart. Now, this is really interesting. You've really rebuilt this guy.
I'm not so sure that we've rebuilt him. He hasn't really got a brand new playstyle, but we identified what it was that we were and weren't happy with Theron, and playstyle wasn't one of those things. We're happy with how he plays. He's a little bit of range damage, a little bit of melee damage, and good control sort of as a backdrop to everything that he does. We haven't changed that in how he works. We've just made him a little bit more, well, not a little bit more, we've made him more efficient in all of those things. He's more efficient as a damage dealer, but he's not Ox. You know, he's more efficient as a damage dealer, he's more efficient as a control piece, and he definitely is better at momentum generation, which is something that the Hunters particularly struggle with, especially important during turn one of a game as well. So I'll just run through the list of things we've done. We've given him light-footed. He's now gained it so that he can walk through his own forest with ease. Also something to just dial that, sorry, just to step back a little bit as well. The other thing about Theron, making him easier to use for newer players. That's one of the bigger criticisms we've received about the Hunters, is that they are not the easiest team for brand new players to pick up and play with. And the changes we've made to Theron are also aimed at combating that he's easier to pick up and play from the off. So he's gained light-footed so that he can walk through rough terrain and, of course, his own forest that he places down. We've edited and simplified his playbook, so he actually has gained a non-momentous 4 damage right at the end of his playbook. His knockdown, his momentous 3 have all come down. He's gained a momentous 1. He's generally a much more easy playbook to use. I don't think there's any double results in there anymore, but he still has like pushes, dodges, momentous damage, nice mix of things. And he's also still got Hunter's Prey, so he's dealing the snared condition to anyone he damages in melee or with his ranged attack. So a very deadly playbook there as well. Pinned has become cost 2, literally make him just steps to make him a little bit more efficient. Arrow to the Knee has changed its name to Snipe, but it's effectively still Arrow to the Knee, but it is now allowed to be used more than once per turn. Basically, we made the decision here that we didn't want to also bring Salvo into this errata because we don't have a problem with Salvo at all. Very happy with where Salvo is. Salvo also has Arrow to the Knee, so we needed to just change the name of this ability, give him effectively a new ability rather than also Arrow to Salvo, who didn't really need to be touched. So now he can do Snipe, which is multiple use Arrow to the Knee, can hit multiple people with his kick debuff, also snared at the same time. Now, this is particularly interesting because Sunstrike, when he uses Sunstrike on himself or anybody else, it generates an extra MP for every character play that the model does. So if Ygritte, for instance, has Sunstrike on her and she does 4 snap fires on different people, she'll generate 4 momentum points from that. If Theron has Sunstrike on himself and he does some punching stuff in melee, generates some momentum that way, and then does, you know, a couple of Arrow to the Knee slaps, sorry, does a couple of snipes and a pinned as well, he'll generate momentum from all of that stuff. He's just a much more solid engine for momentum generation for the team now. And to top it off, Blessing of the Sunfather was always kind of meant to be the engine room for the original Hunters team in terms of influence efficiency, because they have a lot of character plays that they need to rely on. And it didn't work as well as we intended to, because Theron had an inability to target himself, and that is literally all we've changed about Blessing of the Sunfather. It has a slightly different wording to simplify it, but all it means is that he can target himself or anybody else within 6 inches of him with the heroic play. So if Theron wants to, he can heroic himself so that he can use a Sunstrike or a Snipe or a Pinned without spending influence. Suddenly he can go up to effectively spending 8 influences worth of actions during his activation, which increases his damage, it increases his efficiency, increases his options, versatility. It's just all good things which I think Theron needs. So even though there's a long list of things that have happened there, they're all quite small changes that add up to a big change in how he plays. I mean, what do you guys think of him?
I like him.
Can't wait to play him.
I think one of the things I noticed when I was doing the maths on the Snipe and the way Sunstrike works, plus the Blessing, you can get a triple, you know, or a double Snipe with a Pinned. If you throw the Blessing in after you've done the Sunstrike at the start, like it just becomes, quite good. And you realize that he wants to go early in the turn, and it almost falls into the way the Hunters appear to, or the way you've wanted to have them play, is that they want to go early, control the other team, and then pick them off. And you know, also like the way it's passively kind of helping Egret's kind of play style. Like, she'll see so much table time with just the Sunstrike change.
I love that you can do, like, six points of range damage, apply a whole bunch of control effects and snared, and generate some momentum at the same time.
Mm.
You know, that's fucking awesome. That's a legit, that's a legit gun right there. You know? And then you've got on top of it. Like, that's amazing, man.
Mm.
I mean, one of the other things about Vicious Hunters in general, their overall playstyle, we tend to see that Theron is the tends to be the selected drop into as in a sort of anti-footballing captain. And certainly with the new version of Snipe, that's going to help him a little bit more to fulfill that role. So if you're having trouble playing against a fisherman, then, you know, dropping a couple of snipes on key members of their team to drop their kick stats down a little bit is certainly going to help out Hunter's players to stop one or two goals, because they don't have a goalkeeper. They don't really have, you know, someone that can just stand in front and do things like a compound or a tenderizer. So they need to be able to combat footballing teams in a slightly different way, and snipe should help them do that a little bit more, I think.
I like the non-momentous four on the six column as well. It just turns up that melee ability that little bit more, which I think you needed as well.
Yeah, and that momentous one will also be quite important, because that two on his third column can be a little bit difficult to get to sometimes. Sometimes, I mean, from personal experience playing with Theron, you kind of have to accept that non-momentous one sometimes in old days just to get some snare on the opponent to start hitting that two more consistently. But now you can just get the best of both worlds to put momentous one on someone and snare, and then just go from there, go to town.
Yeah, no, that's good. I give you two thumbs up, Perkins. Well done.
I do like. I was just looking at the Egret output at that point as well. So she can effectively get four shots off, four momentum. Like, if you're doing snap fires into, you know, lower def models, obviously, and then poison a whole bunch. That seems pretty good.
A little bit more synergy as well is Blessing of the Sunfather. When you do
get a flurry off.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, you could do your four snap fires, and if she's also had a blessing, then she can do a flurry as well. And even though you're spending a momentum to get the blessing, you're then getting it back because you've hit the flurry that she gets from it as well. You'll generate a momentum point from anything done through a blessing. It does synergize with Sunstrike. So.
Yeah, that's money. I like it.
Mm. Yeah, I'm legitimately excited to play Theron.
I may have signed myself up to a tournament.
Brilliant.
A week and a half. I may or may not also have planned for a few weeks to play Theron.
That's inside a trade to get that point. Come on.
So it's a local event where I was. I actually managed to get through to the final in the last local event. I played a guy called Jason Fox, and I got mercilessly annihilated when I was playing with my mortician. So I'm hoping he comes back so I can have a little bit of revenge with Theron. I'm like, haha, I get to cheat because I've definitely not been practicing with this guy for weeks.
And I changed Brilliant. The rules. Yeah.
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 It'll be fine. No. I don't suspect.
Now, this next guy, Hearn, original Hearn, just a few little tweaks, but very sensible ones.
Hearn is in many ways sort of intrinsically linked to Theron, because we give you quite obvious reasons for bringing both models together, because Hearn has an ability to Nature's Blessing, to jump into Forest Aliens, which Theron brings naturally. So if there isn't one natively on a table, a pitch for you already, then bring these two models together, they'll already synergize quite well. On top of that, they both have the same heroic play. It's the first and only time we've done this in Guild Ball, is that they have the same heroic play, Blessing of the Sunfather. So when we made a change to Theron, we also needed to consider what we're going to do with him, whether we're going to give him a different heroic play, or whether we're happy for them to both have the same thing. And no, we've stuck to our guns with this one, in that they're both going to keep the same heroic, they're both going to have the same change. So both of them have gained from this influence efficiency increase. And it's something that, you know, Hearn's probably needed for a little while, because people have been struggling a little bit with his 1-3 influence stats, people weren't quite sure how to get the most out of him. So being able to target themselves or any other models around them with this Blessing of the Sunfather for free character play is going to be helpful quite a lot. It means that you can make a decision halfway through your activation whether you want to get this free skewered off to go and throw at somebody else, or actually you can decide you don't need it and you're going to Blessing of the Sunfather a different model up to do something later in the turn. It gives you a lot of tactical flexibility. And on the vein of that tactical flexibility and doing his job better, we've made his playbook trigger for singled out momentous, so that when he is doing his job of doing a little bit of damage to any models and knocking them down and setting them up for someone else like Jakar to come in and kill, when he's doing that, he's also generating momentum along the way, which he can then later spend on Blessing of the Sunfather if he wants to. Just not too many big changes there on Hearn, but some small but very important ones I think people are going to love.
Yeah, and I think that was probably one of the few changes he actually needed. I would have liked to see 2-3 influence, but you know, I think the trade-off at having Momentus singled out at one, plus his Forest shenanigans, plus his pocket goal-scoring abilities, you know, that all seems quite reasonable.
The other thing we've got to take into account with Hearn is that he has a veteran model that we don't want to invalidate. And one of the things that we're quite cautious of in terms of Erasmus models, whenever we have veteran models, we want to make sure that we don't invalidate the alternative version. And in giving a sort of more direct comparison with them both having a 2-3 influence stat, we didn't think that was particularly healthy competition for them, whereas how we have them at the moment, we've got dramatically different reasons you bring them to the table for.
Yeah, I think your point about the blessing as well, I mean, that does make up for a lot, doesn't it? That's a really powerful ability.
Well, and thematically it fits in with the last light on Vet Hearn. So, you know, where situations where you'll go in and then, you know, spend your momentum to get off that free skewered, it functions the same now, you know, effectively. So, yeah, no, I like it. I think the single out on one, the single guild ball, was huge because in previous versions of Avarice as well, I always found that Avarice won that face-off. If you wanted someone that could single someone out, you'd take Avarice over him all day and, you know, purely on the momentum. So.
And that's it. That becomes the end of the errata. What do you think?
I just think it's a whole range of really kind of sensible changes that deal with the some of the more offensive characters in the game, sort of bringing them back into parity, and then taking stuff that's quite underutilized and giving them a sense of relevance. I think it's good. Like, on balance, I mean, you've done a good job.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's, yeah, models that need it. I did have a question in regards to another model that I like. Part of me was hoping was going to get one slight change, was Cena and the zero influence stat. Did Cena get a look in at any point?
So I'm going to talk about sort of the errata as a whole when we come to
select
models on it. That we have to make sure that every model that is on this errata is on there for a very specific reason. I mean, I think the best example of this is where we chose not to take Salvo, but we did choose to take Hearn, because both of those models have links to Theron in that Salvo had the same character play. They both had Arrow to the Knee and they shared that, and that Hearn and Theron also share Blessing of the Sunfather. And we chose to take two different approaches there, and that we didn't errata Salvo because we knew that model didn't need to be on this errata. And we chose to errata Hearn because we did know that he's a big important player for a big important model for the Hunters players to use, and we want people using him more often. When it comes to Cena, we are seeing Cena being played, and on top of that as well is that sometimes if you are going to, it's very difficult to pick out a model in the game that anybody could say this guy is absolutely perfect. I mean, as we try as hard as we can to make perfect models, but there are always going to be tiny little things that people would go, I'd do this or I'd do that differently or I'd do this differently. And we've kind of done that on purpose. The game is very subjective. There's a lot that you can argue about, and we've done that on purpose. It creates a lot of discussion, creates varied play styles, varied teams, and it just makes the game more interesting for everyone if there are things to talk about, rather than two players turned up at the table. I can see exactly why you've taken that six. You can see exactly why I've taken this six. There's no argument about any players that would have been better. Nothing for us to discuss. We're just going to play this game, walk away, and never have a conversation ever again. That's the most antisocial situation I can think of, and I'm sure people don't want that. So we are looking for ways to increase conversation. And what I'm trying to get around to here is that even though there are very few models that we can say this guy is absolutely spot on perfect, that even if you were going to make certain changes to a model, then sometimes that change isn't big enough to warrant being on an errata. Now, what I'm purposely trying to muddy the waters here and not tell you whether I think Cena should have a change or not, because I want you guys to decide and discuss that, and that's interesting. We're happy people to talk about the game. But even if there was something there, then that change might be so small that it's not worth putting on an errata in the first place, even if there was a change to be had at all. Alternatively, we're just happy to have him play as he is, because he creates discussion, he creates controversy when you play him and go, ah, I don't understand why you're playing that guy. Well, actually, I just won the game, so maybe I was right because I did play him, play the Cena. So it's
all I'd say is a vet catalyst at that point and go 2-2 influence. That would be my argument. Done.
It's true, but then if you take those two models in a comparison, then you have Cena with less boxes but with tough hide, and then you have Catalyst that can die to a stiff breeze as long as he's playing someone that, you know, has a reasonable amount of damage on them. So what's the word I'm looking for here? Is the one where he takes 4 damage at the end of a return. I can't remember what it's called.
So
he's actually got like super low defensive stats. Both of them are 2-1, but you've got deteriorating, and no tough hide versus tough hide. One of them is a dramatically much more difficult mold to take out. And on top of that as well, what I find one of the weaknesses of veteran Catalyst as a player is that he's easier to tie up. If you've got this intimidating roar on Cena, it's very difficult to prevent him from just getting a charge off as long as you use him carefully. You don't get him bogged down in 5 or 6 enemy players. Catalyst, as soon as he gets engaged by 1-2 enemy players, he finds it much more, particularly if they've got a reasonably good defense as well, he finds it very difficult to get himself unstuck. I actually did quite a hilarious thing in when I was mentioning that tournament I played recently where I lost to Jason Fox in the final, the game before I played Jason in the semis, I played a Smoke Alchemist player who was playing veteran Catalyst, and he was doing the same trick all day to people where he was playing quite defensively and then waiting for people to try and work their way through these smoke AoEs, and then when soon as a player comes through the smoke AoEs, then bang, hits them with veteran Catalyst, does a witness mate, takes them out, and then sort of sets for it up again. That was his sort of tactic for the day. Whereas I was literally throwing every single model I could at him just to make sure I got veteran Catalyst engaged. And he actually never managed to get a single charge off the entire game. Dirge goes flying in. He kills Dirge. Fair enough. That's fine. So instead, I'm going to charge Silence into Vitriol with the only intent of dodging off Vitriol to get engaged with Catalyst again. And guess what? I've got creation, so the bird just came back as well.
Oh, nice.
So those kind of things are much more difficult to get off with Cena, and you can get quite consistent charges off it because of things like intimidating roar. So, but that's what I'm talking about. When it comes to
I think the criticism of Cena has been one generally of momentum efficiency, right? Like 0-2, all right, my team's low on influence, it's going to be hard to generate momentum. I actually think the Sunstrike change will be very interesting to see. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in terms of dealing with that issue. And I think you may have. You may have done something to shift it sufficiently. So, that 0-2 won't matter so much because, you've still got the Furious Charge. You can still do a fair bit of good damage with Cena, even if you give him or her or it nothing. But that Sunstrike alone, right, that's a really good way to convert. And that may be enough to actually do it.
Could be.
We'll see. I'm going to start playing it.
Yeah, I know. This is the thing, man. It's got me thinking. Like, I am now, as we're talking, I'm thinking, how the fuck do I, how does this roll out on the table? I can't wait until this drops.
Mm. Yeah, no, me too. It's good, hopefully good to create some more discussion as well. Forums were a little bit quiet until recently, and then we saw the pitch formations drop, and that's caused some nice conversation between players. I was actually this morning halfway through listening to your recording with Matt about pitch formations. Didn't get to finish it. Going to finish that later on. Seemed like it generated some really nice discussion. Hopefully this errata will continue to do that. It's not the purpose of dropping it, because there's many reasons for dropping errata. The game, arguably, you needed it at the moment, but it also has the nice side effect of creating more discussion, getting people interested again.
I think, ironically, just giving Theron light footed, you've probably dropped your forum traffic.
Yeah, there's not going to be arguments there, is there?
People will just be like, makes sense. Going on what the fuck? So what's going on? He's the forest so captain.
Yeah, I do love the amount of light footed you can get in a hunter's team though. Like, that's so good, and I love that. It's just that passive kind of ability.
Ah, man, no, that's good. I mean, like the shark stuff as well. I mean, you've dealt with the very worst of his excesses. He's still like a super powerful striker. He's still got access to amazing kind of movement potential. But you now have counterplay in that if he doesn't set up properly before he scores a goal or even afterwards, he's going to be punished for it. And that's how it should be, as opposed to him just sitting there and giving you the finger.
And then, another part of me I talked about before about sort of pick rate and selectability of different captains. But, there's also another aspect to this errata where we have purposely singled out a number of the sort of, if you want the top few players and then the bottom few players, just try and bring those guys a little bit close together. And hopefully people overall can enjoy this game, regardless of the matchup that they're playing, we want people to feel like they've got options going into every matchup, that you can't, there should never be a situation in Guild Ball where you come to the pitch and go, I've lost this, and you haven't even rolled a die yet. We don't want that to be the case. So as long as we're allowing more people to have a better chance of playing the game, having some fun, and beginners are understanding models much more easily, then we're doing a good job, hopefully.
I'm all for it, man. Like, and seeing stuff like Hammer just sort of tweaked to improve his playability, and Ox as well, that goes towards shaking up a meta, creating a new environment, as opposed to the same thing over and over again. Also, seeing Midas and Vitriol dealt with in the way that they should be dealt. I mean, you deserve some humanitarian award for that, Perkins. Like, let me take my hat off to you. Fuck those guys.
I'm not really sure what to say about that. Thank you.
You're going to get some hate, man. You're going to get some hate for sure. People will be like, oh my God.
You can never please everybody, but at the end of the day, we're just trying to hope that everybody enjoys the game overall, more so as a result of this errata. You know, I mean, I weep for the one person out there that already thought Theron was the most broken captain in the game, and they're just going to have the worst week ever when they see this thing happen. But, you know, on the whole, I think the majority of people are hopefully going to enjoy Guild Ball more as a result of this errata. Something else I missed at the beginning, actually, and it would be nice, actually, if you guys, I know you guys do a blurb at the start of your podcast, if you could throw it, like, if you don't want to have me saying this and you guys trying it at the start, that's probably more appropriate. But something to throw in about this errata is that because we wanted to not limit our changes so much, we want to make sure that we made the exact changes that we wanted to make. A lot of these changes, such as the entirely new playbooks, you can't put those in an errata document. You have to create digital cards. You can't explain how a playbook has changed in an errata doc. It's just not appropriate, which is why that there will be digital cards that that follow this. Well, not follow this errata, but be released at the same time as this errata drops. So you'll have the raw text document explaining the changes, and you'll also have digital cards. There is currently no plan on whether we're going to print those cards or not. So people will be allowed to print those off, take them to events, we're also hoping that the people that use, there's a number of free smartphone apps, and obviously the people that run those smartphone apps are perfectly welcome to update their digital files as well. There's no current plan to print them off and put them actually in boxes just yet. You know, not saying that's going to be the case forever. We'd be interested to hear some feedback on that. But that's currently the plan, is just to have them as digital card releases.
Yeah, so, I'm all for it.
So if that's something you guys could...
Do you have any plans to allow devices for tournament play? Because at the moment...
you'd bring this up.
No. At the moment, it's at the grace of your opponent, but I find it really...
I mean, it's allowed, but it just, what we think it's appropriate that you ask your opponent to use those. I mean, that's from personal experience of other games, I found it a little bit frustrating sometimes when I've come to the table and I want to see health amounts, or I want to see specific rules, and I don't really want to pester my opponent on time. I know that they can just bang it over to my side of the chess clock and I can read it my own time, but I don't really want to hand dust someone else's device if they've paid a lot of money for it. I've got slippery fingers. I might drop a smartphone and smash it on the floor or something like that. I don't want to be doing that. At the same time, when I'm playing a tournament, I would like to be able to have a quick glance at the health pools on the opposite side of the table. Now, there are a lot of benefits to smartphone apps, and I don't have a problem with them, which is why they are allowed in events, but it does feel appropriate to me that you need to ask your opponent, because as an opponent, it's polite to be asked, you know, if you're okay with that. It's like, my personal preference would be to ask the opponent to use cards, because I would like to see the damage that's there. It's just better for me at a quick glance. I can make decisions if I know, cool, I know this guy's on this amount of health, I know this guy's on this amount of health, and it's more information quicker than having to ask them to bring up a card and stuff. Does that make some sense?
That's fair enough. Are you guys planning to update the Vassal module at the same time as these new digital cards are made available?
It's a good question. I don't have an answer for you on that at the moment, but I imagine the answer will be yes, but I would need to check that one.
I was just going to jump in and ask. I mean, there's been obviously only four models released, but I was going to move on to the blacksmiths and just see what kind of feedback you guys had got so far about the blacksmiths and what you thought of that feedback and how you think they're kind of rolling out.
It's been positive so far. I mean, people are liking the aesthetic on the whole. I mean, you can never please everybody. There's always a couple of naysayers. But on the whole, people have been quite excited about the blacksmiths, and I'm really excited to see them drop. And it's really difficult, having been excited about these guys for quite a long time. We've been working on building up our lead times. These guys, the blacksmiths, have been in development for a long time. I think back end of last year, sometime around then. In fact, no, it's about halfway through last year is when we really started the blacksmith development. So we've been working on these guys for quite a long time, and it's been difficult keeping the secret when you're really excited about it. So, and there's still a number of things that you guys don't know that I can't tell you yet that is really cool and exciting about the blacksmiths coming out. So I think at this point, the Cinder article dropped yesterday as we're recording this. So, yep. So you've now seen four models worth of blacksmith rules, and we chose the models that we were releasing through those blogs very deliberately, because we wanted to give, like, an ambulance ledge. We gave you sort of the quintessential blacksmiths, and that they were quite simple models to play with. It showed you a very simple method of how a master and apprentice can benefit from playing with each other, and then we purposefully took Furness and Cinder second to give you a sort of contrast to that. These are two, it's a very different pair that don't work quite as closely together in terms of sort of location on the pitch, but they still quite clearly have a lot of synergy with each other and they can benefit from each other quite a bit. I mean, one of the things I've seen people picking up on a little bit now is suddenly that really low tackle on Furness's playbook suddenly makes a lot of sense, because if he's the one in a scrum and the ball happens to be anywhere near him, he can use his 2-inch melee zone, low tackle, nick the ball back, use his 3-8 kick to punt it out to Cinder, sorry, who's probably near the side of the pitch, who can then possibly go and get a goal. And there's those little bits of synergy that people start to pick up on now, which is really cool. And I'm really excited to see what people make of the whole team. So, yeah, I think it's going well so far. But what have you guys made of them?
I quite like them. I find them, the models are lovely. The play style is something I'm still kind of working my head around, but you know, it's like anything, you know, new team comes out, it's the new hotness, and it's going to be interesting to see how it shapes things.
Yeah, I like the free ball killing kind of nature too, the thematic side of that, as well as just the functional side of what, you know, happens there. So I think that's kind of good to people who, you know, want to just basically drift the ball off and, you know, do nothing with it in a corner. You know, she can, Cinder can basically destroy that. So, yeah, I think there's some pretty cool plays in it. And you can start to get an understanding of, you know, which ones you want to be going in what order, not just the master and apprentice, but also, you know, start of your turn, end of your turn as well. Yep. You know, you can see, yep, Cinder coming in late, possibly quite good. Get it, you know, if she goes last, gets the ball, then, you know, kills the ball, you kick it out to advantageous position, knowing that you've got the momentum race won, and then all of a sudden, you know, you've taken the ball from one side of the pitch to the other. So, yeah, no, I love it.
I am curious as to when the second round of farmer models are likely to drop. So Thresher and I think Millstone in particular. I know the first batch is coming out around the end of August, is that right?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the exact, whether it's, I know that we're trying to get them for Gen Con, and I cannot remember if that's been confirmed yet or not. It's basically dependent. Now that we've grown to a particular size as a company, that we're not working sort of as locally with a lot of different things. We're trying to manufacture sort of shipping worldwide and stuff. And when you're coordinating things on a worldwide effort, a lot more things are dependent on when a ship arrives at a port or when a truck arrives somewhere. And there's elements there that we can't control. So, yes, we're trying to get the farmers to Gen Con. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet, but a lot of that is dependent on things that unfortunately we can't control.
All right. And then when will the next lot of farmers models, when are they roughly scheduled for?
I don't have that information to hand, unfortunately. I'm sorry to disappoint you.
No, that's okay. But you're a passionate lover, so you make up for it in other ways.
Thank you.
Very exciting. It's like, you know, to go from radio silence to, I guess, effusive information giving, it's a nice thing. It's really good.
Well, I mean, one of the things that when we saw in a couple of complaints or people talking about the fact that there was a bit of radio silence, is it's so difficult for us because obviously we, you know, because of the nature of our work, we do have to control the flow of information outwards. But we knew on the inside, on this side of the fence, that we have so much stuff that we're going to be showing you over the next few months, and so much exciting, cool stuff to talk about. Just not time for it to be spoken about yet. And then now that we're starting to get sort of the tip of the iceberg, this errata, what I would say represents the tip of the iceberg of some really exciting stuff going up over the next few months. So people should hopefully be excited playing Guild Ball. And I know I certainly am, but it's difficult for me to explain all the reasons why, because I can't tell you about everything yet. But please believe me, there is a lot of cool stuff coming. But that was why it was so difficult during that quiet period, because we knew a lot of this stuff was just around the corner. It's just not time for it to be sent out yet. But yeah, so now hopefully you've seen us now actively re-engaging more with the community, but yeah, elements like podcasts and stuff getting out there. Now that we've got a more stable platform underneath us for how we approach marketing. And hopefully it's going to be positive days going forwards.
So. Yeah, man. Quarter 3, 2017, get hype.
I like it. Yeah. I thought it was just Dave's Twitter campaigns that kind of put everyone off.
I shouldn't be allowed on Twitter. Oh, you know, we're running a contest at the moment.
Hey?
Yeah, this is episode 20, so you're our special guest for episode 20. Yeah, man, it's a milestone. We didn't think we'd get here.
Well, it's about 19 further than we thought we'd get.
Yeah. I mean, when I hear people talking about what their favorite podcast, I mean, I'm not just trying to sort of like round nose you a little bit here, but like when people hear people talk about their favorite podcast and stuff, you're definitely in that conversation a lot of time for which ones people prefer to listen to.
Do you know why though, Perkins? Australians are crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I've known a few of you, and that's definitely true. And and I've lived there a little bit as well.
I think we're down here fucking smearing our junk with Vegemite and riding kangaroos. Man, I'm not gonna say they're wrong, but I'm not gonna say they're right.
Sure,
you don't knock it till you try it, really.
The old kangaroo spread. Fuck yeah. Get hype, quarter three, 2017. I don't know how much of this I'm gonna edit. I don't really
know.
I mean, something for you to do during your editing, by the way, is just see what happens when you slow down my voice by about half, because I legitimately, and Phil knows I'm being nice here because I love Phil. Phil is one of my favorite people, but when I listened to one of Phil's more recent podcasts on Go Well Tonight, I actually sped it up by half. And when you listen to Phil speak, he sounds like a normal person. It's great. And then when Phil speaks, you can't understand him. And then Phil speaks again, and it's like talking to a normal person. So I wonder what happens in reverse if you do that to me and slow my voice down by about half. Maybe it sounds normalish. Who knows?
I'm going to have to do that. I'm all for audio hijinks. I love that sort of stuff. So our contest, we're giving away a limited edition mist to the best answer to the question, what have you got to say to Alex Botts? So I don't know, man. I did see this come up.
Yeah, yeah. It was really nice. I like some of those answers, actually.
Do you have anything to the best answer?
No, God, you caught me off guard. No, I don't right now. I haven't got any quips. I'll have to think of one.
That Botsy, he's not a bad bloke. I've come around to him. He's an okay dude.
He's a good guy.
I like his hair, and maybe we can go on a date sometime. I mean, I'm married, but, you know, I'm open.
Yeah, things just got weird. I don't know.
It's always weird with Botsy. That's what makes him so compelling. You just never know. It's like he's so conflicted. It's like, I can't say that. I was gonna launch into a screed about hate fucking, but I just can't, man. You can't put that on radio. Yeah. Do we want to wrap this up?
Or? On that note, I think it might be time to let Jamie get back to real work. Well, I cry.
Well, it's been fun.
You're one of our favourite guests, and we're glad that you could be here for this historic milestone.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome back. He does talk doesn't he? He's a fast talker.
Yeah, fuck. Well, if you slow down that audio, we might actually get an episode that's longer than 15 minutes. That's how quick he talks.
Yes, it's very true. So as part of episode 20, we ran a contest on Twitter, and we asked Twitter what they had to say to Alex Botts. And, you know, we got quite a good number of responses, and true to our word, the best response to that question will win a limited edition mist. So, Campbell, I don't know, would you like to hear some of the responses?
Let's go through those responses. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, we had Jake from Hall of Legends flooding us with some wrestling-based responses. He said, Alex, it ain't easy being the bad guy. He also asked Alex what he was going to do when Hulk Hogan runs wild on you. We got a few funny responses as well. Martin over from formerly of Strictly the Worst said, "Does Alex know that his name is an anagram for Let Ox Stab?" Christian Norden said, "Alex, don't let the Aussies get to you." I'm pretty sure he doesn't. I think he knows that we're only mucking around. Stevens asked Alex or stated, "We know how much first place means to you, but how long do you plan on keeping Jordan locked up in the Botsy dungeon? Hashtag Diglod." We know what he does down there. Alex himself actually sent a image response. It's a dog and a cat with their arms around each other, and underneath them the caption is, "Born to die, world is a fuck, kill 'em all 1989, I am Trash Man, 410... billion, 757,864,530 dead cops." It's just fucking weird, man. This is why we ask him
these questions. It's actually psychological evaluation we're doing. It's a community thing. Yeah.
Steve Price said, "Are you the one that doesn't get pop culture, or the one that's strictly the worst host at Gilball?" Black Orifice, always a fan of Botsy, said, "Thanks, mate." Thanks, Botsy. singled out. Old Andrew said, has he ever heard of Alex Bott? I'm pretty sure he might have. Ruben McCallum actually had a sensitive touch on the question. He said, I will ask him the only question that can defeat him. What is love?
Ooh.
Indeed, what is love?
Yeah. Baby, don't hurt.
Right. Now, John Bucket came in with what I felt was a very, very strong response. He said, if a tournament placed on strength of schedule, but cardboard harvest markers were mandatory, what would you do?
Ooh. I think we've come close to a winner there.
Yeah,
I think that's a good response. It's a finalist, sure.
It definitely a finalist. I liked Hugh Melrose's response. Now, he dug up an old set of books, The Fabulous Saga of Alexander Bott and The Earthworm Tractor. this is actually a real set of books.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah, I'm serious. And he says, The Fabulous Saga of Alexander Bott and The Earthworm Tractor. If you want reality and sex, these stories are not for you. Very strong, very strong.
Far out. We had a pretty good response there.
We did, we did. You know, I really like Hugh's entry. I really do.
I think we have a winner then.
Yes, which is not to say that John Bucket's wasn't very strong as well. Do we have something we can send to John Bucket?
How about John? We'll message both those people. John can let us know what guild he plays, and we'll try to dig up a mini from that guild. We have got a veritable assortment. Or we'll just send him the most trash model we can find, one or the other. It could be pretty much anything, but we'll definitely get something out to him.
Yeah, and Hugh, congratulations. You've won the limited edition Myst, mainly based on your research efforts, I think.
That's what I was going to say. He's the only one who actually went to some effort, I reckon, right there. I mean, the anagram was pretty good, so...
Yeah, old Martin. Unfortunately, Botsy, you can't win a contest which you are the subject of. That's just the rules.
He's already had a crack at the question anyway, hasn't he?
He has. Poor Botsy. He's not so bad. That's the contest. It was a veritable shit show, and thank you all for playing.
Yes, absolutely. Next month we will smash out another mini and we'll run another contest. Alex, we promise it won't be to do with you, but it will be to offend someone else, I'm sure.
Yes, we're an outrage factory here. We should probably mention Australian Nationals. It looms ever closer.
No, flights are booked, mate. We're all locked in. Accommodation's there.
Yep.
What are the dates again, David?
I believe, Campbell, it is the 25th and 26th of August. It'll be at 3D6 Games in Canberra.
Nice.
Be there or don't be there. But if you're not there, sadness.
It's that weekend. It's not just one day. There's a couple of days of gaming. First day is the Nationals. Second day, we'll actually... I was chatting to Matty Graham, the legend that is the beard.
It's the 26th and 27th of August.
There you go. Filthy lying already.
Mm.
And look it up on the Gilbert Australia webpage, or Facebook page, and all the numbers are there. But Matty was saying maybe we do, or he does the ultimate alternate deployment as the second day. You know, maybe we throw that in as one of the competitions on the second day, because we're trying to do a bit of a festival, you know, community atmosphere, not just one tournament, a few different tournaments going on, so...
Yes, man. If you're on the fence, just do it. Just go play. Tournaments are always fun. You can go to Chicago if you win. It's a great place.
Yeah, sign up. I mean, it's the only way you get that kind of experience. And I know the singled out guys talked about it. That you get, you know, four or five games in a day, times a couple of days. You get a lot of experience, and you don't. You know, people who are worried about, oh, I'm going to come up against someone that's, you know, hyper competitive or whatever. The nature of it is, okay, if you get them round one or whatever, after that, because of the way the pairing process works, you end up with people playing people with the same kind of mentality and skill level as you, and you actually get a lot out of that. So, you know, only one person can win. There's going to be everyone else upset that they haven't won. So, you know, try to make your goal not just the winning, but the enjoying.
Yes, and you'll be there in your national costume as well, so people can take photos with you. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, it's going to be good.
Yep.
It's going to be good. We'll just keep it under wraps as to what that is, but it's pretty fucking impressive.
They're not going to know what hit them, mate.
No. Mm. Someone might lose an eye.
Hopefully.
Mm.
Yeah. So, episode 20. Anything else you want to say for this historic milestone, this valiant feat of effort?
Well, I did come up with the other numerical statistic, was that it comes after the number 19. But I think we should just do a final shout-out to Big Daz from Nerdvana Games. He is the man, the myth, the legend, the guy that supplies all the Guild Ball in our local area, Guild Ball Minis. So jump on nerdvanagamessa.com, and he'll hook you up. If you're in Adelaide, he will hand-deliver the crack.
Indeed. He is a formidable man. He is a wonderful delivery person. He is sporting quite a nice beard and has done for quite a time now.
Yeah,
He's a gentle lover. He's very caring.
He's awesome, and he's going to Nationals. So, hey, look, if you're wanting to time a few things, I'm sure he's more than happy to pack a second suitcase with minis to sell off to people or that they've pre-ordered. So think about that scenario too.
Mm. Go, guys. Go hard.
You're a legend.
All right, well, let's get the fuck out of here, shall we?
Mm-hmm. Maybe put in some fireworks sound effects at the end there.
Yeah, all right, I'll do that.
Yep.